So we arrive at the most important day, the most important feast of our whole year and of our whole faith, Easter, our celebration of the resurrection. And we believe that the resurrection is not just a symbol, it's not just a story, but that it's a historical event, that it really happened. St. Paul went so far as to say this. He said, if the resurrection did not happen, then our faith is in vain. And so in other words, if the resurrection isn't real, we have no reason to be here. We're wasting our time. We might as well be still in bed or drinking our coffee, chatting around the table. There's no reason to be here at Mass if the resurrection didn't really happen. But what we believe and are convinced as Christians that the reason that our faith has survived for 2,000 years and throughout the world, we think we have billions of Christians in the world today. The only reason is because what happened 2,000 years ago that we commemorate today really happened. The British writer Graham Greene was a convert to Christianity. He was talking about this gospel passage we just heard. He said, "It's so strange that we get those details. The other disciple, or traditionally the apostle John, arriving at the tomb first, and then Simon Peter after him. They go into the tomb. The cloth that covered his body is in one part, and then the cloth that covered the face is on another part. Why does that even matter? Why are those details included in the story? Unless what those apostles experienced that day was so vividly marked in their mind that they would never forget it. And so as this gospel was being composed decades after these historical events, it was still clear in the mind of the apostle exactly what he saw on that morning, exactly what happened when they arrived at the tomb. So it's these details that we receive in the gospel that help us to understand that we're not just talking about a myth or a legend. This isn't something that happened long, long ago in a galaxy far away. It's something that happened on a precise date and time, in a precise location, that a man who had been killed brutally, we have an image of him right here. Crucifixion was the worst way known at that time to die. It was the Romans' most effective way of keeping their subjects into submission through this terrible instrument of torture that we call crucifixion. It's the only reason why we display this is because we believe that the man who died in this way was raised from the dead. And that it wasn't just his spirit that went up to the Father to live forever, but that it was his body. His body, which had laid cold in the tomb, lifeless, no heartbeat, no breath, cold, dead as can be, as dead as a rock. That was Jesus's body. 3 days in the tomb. What happens on the third day? His body is raised. New life pumps through his veins. He breathes again. This is why after the resurrection, he would appear to his disciples. He asks them for something to eat. If he was just a ghost or just a spirit, what would he have done with that piece of fish that was handed to him? But the disciples knew that this was the risen body of Jesus. The disciples, remember, gathered around him in shock and fear, and he invited them, because he didn't want them to think that he was a spirit or a ghost, he invited them to come up and touch his body. And so that's what we receive in the gospel, the eyewitness account of what happened when Jesus rose from the dead, not his soul, body and soul, raised from the dead. And that body will never die again. That body is now an immortal body, free from any of the problems that we experience in the body that are due to original sin. Jesus's body is not subject to that. But he carries with him those wounds that he received at the crucifixion, the marks of his love. Isn't that interesting? That God, when raising Jesus's body, wouldn't heal those marks. Why is that? Well, because forever and ever and ever, for all eternity, Jesus desires that his body show what happened on Good Friday. And the reason we call it good, because it's the ultimate sign of God's love for us. It's so important for us to remember, and again, our world lies to us all the time in very subtle ways. Jesus was a good person. He was a moral teacher. He was a wise man, a sage, a philosopher. He gave us so many good teachings. If that's all that Jesus is, who cares? Lots of people are wise. Lots of people give good teachings or are very moral people. That's not why we're here. We're here because somebody died and raised from the dead. Because we have a body that was cold and dead for 3 days that now has life, and life pumps through it. He's fully alive and he's never going to die again. So the unbelievable, the unthinkable happened 2,000 years ago. The apostles were so convinced that this was the case that they saw Jesus, they touched him, they heard him, they watched him eat. After Jesus ascended into heaven, not his soul, not his body, not his spirit, body, bodily ascension into heaven to be with God forever, united now with God in heaven. The apostles were so convinced of what they had saw. What did they do? They left Jerusalem. They went to India. They went to Spain. They went to Ethiopia. They went to Estonia, Greece. Everywhere they possibly could, telling people, a man died and is raised. And when they were challenged for that, they lost their lives. And they were willing to do so. That's how much they believed what had happened, what they had seen, what they had heard. They believed it so much, they were willing to stake their whole life on it. And if someone wanted to kill them because they said what they saw, fine. But they weren't going to deny that they had experienced the resurrection of the body. Why is this so important to us? Well, again, Jesus isn't just a wise person, a moral teacher, an example for us. He is those things, but he's so much more than that. Why? Because he's God and man. He is the Son of God, eternally existing with the Father for all time, who goes on a mission of love to save God's children. What had happened to them? Well, they had decided to do it themselves. This is what happened in the garden. We read in the book of Genesis about the man and the woman disobeying God and eating an apple. The apple's just a symbol. There's no apple. The man and the woman decided that day that it didn't matter what God said. They were going to decide for themselves what was good and evil. They were going to decide for themselves how they were to live. They were going to decide what was going to make them happy, fulfill them, give them human flourishing. They were going to decide. They weren't going to listen to God. And what was the natural consequence of this? We read in the scriptures that the man and the woman were exiled from the garden and suffering was their lot. We shouldn't read this as a petty God punishing these people. We should read it as the natural consequence for what happens when the creature doesn't follow its instructions for use. We're a creature. Somebody made us. The one who made us knows what's going to make us happy, what's going to fulfill us. But yet we act all the time like the creature who knows what's best for me. I know what's best for me, not God. It's very foolish. So the man and the woman suffer the consequence when creatures decide what they are for themselves without any view to what the Creator intended for them to make them happy and flourish. And what was the natural consequence? Suffering. And miserable suffering. What's one of the first things that happens when the man and the woman leave the garden? One of their sons kills another of their sons. How awful. If chaos, violence, hatred. And this, of course, is only magnified, and don't we see this throughout human history? But more than anywhere, I see it in my own heart. The bad. That's what original sin is. It's a filth that infects us. God saw his people suffering who he loved. He saw that they couldn't get their lives together themselves. So what does he do? He says, I'm going to send them a savior. I'm going to unite part of myself, my own son. I'm going to send to unite to human nature. And I am going to work out love in them. And what does that look like? The cross. That's what the cross is. In the cross, every form of dysfunction is thrown at Jesus. It's dumped all over him. Every single worst thing that we can think of and imagine and be as human beings, that's what the cross is. Just think of all of the hatred that's leveled at Jesus, the abuse of power, this vulnerable person who's in the throes of this oppressive force of the Roman governor and the religious authorities. It's jealousy, it's betrayal by a friend, it's being abandoned by the rest of your friends. And of course, it's the horrible torture that he experienced. So much violence, oppression, hate that's thrown at Jesus. What does Jesus do? He doesn't reject it. He accepts all of it. All of our sin, he takes upon himself. The sins of the whole world for all time, he bears in his own body, mind, heart, and soul. He accepts it, and it kills him. And he goes to hell, and his body lies for 3 days cold and dead. And on the third day, God raises that body from the dead, and he walks out of the tomb. What does that mean? It means that God won, and there was no dysfunction of the world, no violence, no hatred that was stronger than God. Nothing. It's so important that we know that this is what Easter is. This is what the resurrection is. It means God triumphs over the worst forms of human dysfunction. This is true outside of us. This is also true inside of me. That there's nothing unclean in my heart, and there's a lot of uncleanness. There's nothing unclean in my heart that can render God unclean, but only the opposite can happen. Just like when the whole world throws all that filth at Jesus and he takes it. And he takes it so much in himself that he dies, is buried, goes to hell. When he rises from the dead, every dysfunction that was thrown at him loses its power. It's drowned in the ocean of God's mercy. So Jesus changes everything. Some immediate examples of this, the people who are actively killing Jesus, they're nailing him to the cross. What does he say? Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. The soldier That is resurrection happening, redemption happening. That the one who, the soldier who takes a lance and pierces Jesus' side with a cross and with a lance and blood and water flow out, that soldier, what does he say after he does it? Truly, this man was the Son of God. Already a conversion. He's killing. Well, Jesus was already dead. He's proving Jesus is dead by tearing through his body with a lance. And he has a conversion on the spot. This is how God confronts the dysfunction and violence and hatred and disorder of the world. He takes it and he turns it on its head. He turns the bad into good. He works good through that evil. Now evil doesn't have the power that it had before. Again, not just outside of me, inside of me. There's nothing unclean and unclean in my heart that can render Jesus clean. Only the opposite can happen. When I bring the unclean and soiled from my heart to Jesus, when I give it to him, he makes me clean. I can't render Jesus unclean. He can only make clean. Gosh, we need him so much. Gosh, I need him so much. This is why I come to Mass every Sunday. It's not because I'm a priest. It's because I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner in need of salvation. I'm a sinner in need of healing. And this is what Jesus does. When he gives me the sacraments, baptism, confirmation, reconciliation, Eucharist, he comes right into me. And what does he do? He turns my bad into good. And I need him to do that over and over and over again. You know, I hate the language of obligation. We have a Sunday obligation, obliged to go to Mass. We do. But deep down in my heart of hearts and my soul of souls, I know I need God. That's why I'm here. And I have so much hope today for me because of the cross, because of the resurrection, that there's nothing in my heart that God can't forgive. There's nothing, no dysfunction there that he can't heal and redeem. That's why I need him over and over again every Sunday. Let's ask God today for all the grace that he can give us this Easter, which is infinite grace. Let's open our hearts to his love, invite him in, invite him into those fearsome places, those ugly places, those that filth that's in our heart. Let's open up to him, let him in so that he can heal, redeem, breathe in us the new life of the resurrection.